Hello and welcome to the MBS podcast, the podcast channel of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society. I'm Thiago Otero, professor at the University Medical Center Göttingen in Germany and at Newcastle University in the UK. And today I have the pleasure to interview Dr. Bas Bloem from the University Medical Center Nijmegen in the Netherlands. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us on the occasion of this MBS workshop. It's a pleasure to talk to you. In your lecture, you talked about the Parkinson's pandemic. So can you give us a brief overview of what you covered in your lecture?
I explained to the audience that Parkinson's disease is the world's fast-growing neurological condition. It doubled in the last 20 years. It is expected to double again in the next 20 years. And while this is worrisome enough by its own, I explained why I think this growth is, at least to an extent, if not to a large extent, driven by environmental toxins, making Parkinson's potentially a preventable disease. The focused workshop here was exciting. It was wonderful. It was a glimpse into the future. And we were talking exciting new disease-modifying treatments, which, if applied to an at-risk population who is still free from, you know, a clinical diagnosis, we could eventually postpone or perhaps even prevent Parkinson's disease. At the same time, there were fairly hefty debates whether this is the road forward, because it will be costly, we don't have those treatments. And I argued that, at least in addition to those secondary prevention strategies, we should focus also on primary prevention, really trying to stop the growth of Parkinson's from happening. And we can do that by tackling environmental risk factors.
So it's very eye-opening. I think we need to think about it in this way, because it's a big problem. But when we think about pandemics, of course, we think about the numbers there were, of course, mind-boggling, because the whole world was affected. Here, although the numbers are large, people may think, okay, well, this is not really a pandemic. So what is the strong argument to convince people that this is a serious problem? And I think we don't need to convince us, we are convinced, but we need to go out there and convince people that they need to change behavior. So how can we convince them?
Well, we used the word pandemic on purpose. It's a nice alliteration, Parkinson pandemic, but we use it to open people's eyes. The definition of a pandemic is a disease that is occurring worldwide, and we can tick that box, that's growing fast, and we can tick that box, that is sparing no one, men, women, young, old. Make no mistake, in the Netherlands, one in three people is under the age of 65 when they develop Parkinson's disease. We have special programs for young onset Parkinson's. So Parkinson's affects everyone, and a pandemic leads to debilitating symptoms, and Parkinson's is one of the most terrible things that can happen to mankind. So except for an infectious cause, Parkinson's disease fulfills all the criteria of a pandemic. And I think Parkinson's deserves more attention. It deserves more funding to develop better care for affected individuals, to slow down disease progression, to hopefully find a cure, and at the same time, try to stop the growth from happening.
Makes sense. And the workshop, as you know very well, was on biomarkers and diagnostics. So how do you see the current state of affairs and where we are with the latest developments on biomarkers and how this may help change things also at that level? Because people now know that there may be a test that they can do and that may give them some information. So how can we think about this so that people know that this is not a solution, but it may be some piece of information that will give them some sense of whether they are at risk or not facing the future as the markers improve?
Yeah. So what we discussed, and I think Angelo Antonini did this beautifully in his talk, is that we still diagnose Parkinson's much the way Jean-Marie Charcot diagnosed Parkinson's, with his bare hands, listening to patients and doing a neurological exam. That's on the one hand the beauty of our job as movement disorder specialists. We love our job. But at the same time, we know that this is a late event. By the time we diagnose Parkinson's, 60 to 70% of dopaminergic neurons are lost. We know from the work of Per Borkhammer that the disease is elsewhere in the body. It's elsewhere in the brain, depending on the specific phenotype of Parkinson's. But it's a widespread disease. And all attempts to slow the progression have so far failed. Now, it could be that the hypotheses were wrong. That's not something we hear a lot, but it could be that the hypotheses are wrong. it could be that a single target treatment is not enough, that we need cocktails of treatment targeting multiple mechanisms, or it could be that we target the disease too late. So what was exciting is that we now have avenues of diagnosing Parkinson's earlier, which opens up the door for testing new interventions, whether these be pharmacological or non-pharmacological, to slow down the progression in an earlier disease stage. Importantly, this is all research, and I think there are concerns in our society, and I expressed those concerns in an editorial in Lancet Neurology, that this will spill over to daily clinical care. I think this is an important development, and I encourage it. I'm happy with it, but it's for research purposes and research purposes only. And what is happening is that apparently people can now buy an alpha-synuclein and then go to their doctor and say, and now what? And I think that's bad medicine. It's bad medicine because we don't know the prognosis. We don't know whether a positive alpha-synuclein test will translate into symptoms. And we have nothing to offer these people except for what we can tell the general population, which is exercise, eat healthy, stay optimistic, and avoid exposure to pesticides and other toxic chemicals. So yes, this is an exciting time. We are going to see trials in prodromal Parkinson's, but I think we should steer away from letting this slip into daily care. And this has happened in the Alzheimer field and not to their benefit, at least in my opinion.
Of course, this is a very important issue, and that was the idea when our paper was written, at least, that this was proposed for research purposes. It's very difficult things. Once they are out there, people will interpret them and think that can go and use it. But I mean, we face the same or a similar situation with genetic testing. Any person can go and do a genetic test. This is also, I think, just one additional factor that we need to consider and that should not be done out of context so that people don't, you know, misinterpret what they have in front of them. But yeah, that's important, and definitely it's a discussion that needs to continue. You have been talking a lot about exercise and how this can really have an impact on changing disease progression. So what can we do to convey this message seriously and forcefully to the general public? What can the MDS community that listens to our podcast do on their own to pass the message?
So first of all, it is exciting to see the pharmacological developments, all these different types of approaches targeting elements of the pathophysiology of Parkinson's. My concern is that tackling just one of those elements per trial may not be sufficient. Ultimately, the pathophysiology is the sum of inflammation, alpha-synuclein accumulation, vascular contributions, etc., etc. So just like we are preventing strokes with antihypertensives, cholesterol treatment, antiplatelets, we use cocktails, we may need cocktails of different drugs. What I like about non-pharmacological interventions is that they are probably more agnostic to the precise disease-making mechanism. We know that exercise drives, for example, neuroplasticity in the brain. We've shown this in imaging studies. We know that exercising muscles release irisin, and irisin drives plasticity in the brain. There are cool studies to show that exercise releases clusterin, which is an anti-inflammatory protein. So exercise has the potential to tackle multiple mechanisms at the same time. And we know that there are two studies to show that exercise slows down clinical disease progression, which is not disease modification yet, in clinically manifest Parkinson's. And there's a range of studies that show that people who exercise a lot during life have a lower risk of developing Parkinson's. That's still not enough to conclude that exercise is a disease modifier, but it's close. There's animal work to support it, there's the imaging work. So compared to an antibody against alpha-synuclein, if I had to put my money on, I would put it on exercise. This is why my group, along with colleagues in England and the United States, is now doing the slow speed study, which is one of the world's first completely remote studies. Nobody comes to the hospital, where we randomize people across a lot of extra exercise versus a little bit of extra exercise. And in answer to your question, we work with the gaming industry to really exploit human weaknesses. We give people rewards for reaching their targets, which in the intervention arm is a high level and in the control arm is a low level, but they receive the same awards. And by using gamification elements and reward mechanisms, we hope to push compliance. It's a sort of a Pokemon Go for the elderly. We've already tested it in the stepwise study, which is using the same gamified app on the phone in people with manifest Parkinson's. There are already 300 patients in the study and compliance is excellent. So it works. I think gamification helps, but what helps mostly, I think, is deep learning. So in my clinical practice, I talk about irising. I talk about clustering. I show them the images of plasticity of after exercise, new functional connectivity between the basal ganglia and the cortex. Because ultimately, if people understand the why, they will do the how and what. So we tend to focus on the what, but we forget the why. So deeply invest in why and deep learning to our society through lectures, through our education programs, and to the wider audience remains critical.
I think that's great advice. I know you exercise, I exercise, so let's hope all our listeners...
Practice what you preach.
Yeah, exactly. We want to promote exercise as well.
Yeah.
Bas, thank you so much. Anything else you would like to add?
No, maybe that in addition, we talked about exercise. The next big kid on the block is diet. Diet is very difficult. We are embarking on the first dietary intervention studies. We know that the Mediterranean diet is associated with a lower risk of developing Parkinson's. Two studies show that the Mediterranean diet leads to lower mortality after diagnosis. Doesn't prove anything. Pesticides reach the food chain. What can we do with a biological diet that slows down Parkinson's? So just to mention that there's a whole world to be won in addition to exercise and the many pharmacological interventions. So we're living in exciting times, Tiago.
Wonderful. I like positive messages. Yeah. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. We've just interviewed Bas Bloom on the occasion of the MDSES workshop on diagnostic and progression biomarkers in Parkinson's disease and atypical Parkinsonism in Padua. So I thank you all for listening, and I invite you to join us in our upcoming podcasts.
The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society or their affiliated journals, Movement Disorders, and Movement Disorders Clinical Practice. Any disclosures of the participants can be found within the episode description located on the MDS website.